Hello and welcome back to the BenHeck.com podcast. I'm your host, Ben Heckendorn, and we have a special guest this time.
Hi guys, I'm Parker.
Parker Dillman.
I'm Jones. I'm here too, and we're Skyping because Parker's nowhere near us.
Yeah.
Like 1,500 miles or so, give or take.
And Jones is like, what, 10 miles away? Which, that's a long ways.
Well, you got like 40 feet deep of snow times 10 miles between y'all.
Well,
I wouldn't be able to be a hermit without Skype, so.
No, but Jones actually went out drinking with us last night. It was bizarre.
I did, but it reminded me of why I'm a hermit.
Yeah.
I couldn't find the bar for like 20 minutes.
And you got inside and couldn't find the bartender.
Yeah, I had a glass of water.
I was a little surprised at how difficult it was for you to find alt brewing.
It's very arduous.
I guess they don't have a sign.
Y'all want your
sandwich board out by the road.
I just thought you'd been there before. You know, you ever do that? Like, we have like two friends, and you don't remember if they've met, and so you like reintroduce them.
And they just look at you weird.
Yeah, like Mike Kowalski, it was weird. Like we were hanging out at the bar before you showed up, Jones, and I mentioned Allison, and he's like, "Who?" And I'm like, "But you never met Allison," which I can't believe, but apparently he hadn't.
You can't imagine that? We've all
heard that same joke.
Oh yeah, Jones, did we ever tell the story about my inability to imagine the number 5?
You know, I don't know if we've ever told that on the podcast. Maybe we have.
Maybe it's time to tell that story.
It is. It's quite the tale.
So we were on a road trip with our other long-lost friend, Dale. And Heidi was on that trip too, right? Oh, yeah, because you got...
Yeah, yeah, because we went down to whatever that was, Indianapolis
yeah.
or something, to look at Egypt stuff.
Yeah.
That's kind of a weird place to go looking at Egypt stuff.
Oh, and that was the first time I ever ate at White Castle. Was on that trip.
Me too, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, so we were stopping at the Belvedere Oasis, which is just west of Chicago. And we were at the gas station. And I was noticing the cigarette prices, I think. Because everything in Illinois...
You don't really smoke, though.
I like cigars.
Yeah, he was looking at that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, but everything in Illinois is more expensive than Wisconsin, except tobacco products. For whatever reason, they don't tax the hell out of that. And I was like, oh my God!
And oh, you know why? You know why? Because people who smoke die faster, so they get off their pension faster.
And they can vote more frequently.
Oh, wow. Well, anyway, so I'm like, oh my God. It's $6 for a pack of Marlboro Reds at a gas station in this state? I can't even imagine how cheap it would be at a grocery store. And then Jones is like, really? You can't imagine like the number 5 or 4?
You had to be there, but it was awesome.
And it's like, you know... It's like if you said 7, you couldn't imagine 7. That's a little bit different because it's just a bigger number. And, you know, Ben might not be able to count more than 6.
Right.
5, you have to get the 6, you have to, you know, go through 5.
Yeah, it's like saying, wow, look how far away Pluto is. I can't even imagine Neptune.
Oh,
Hashtag
God.
Pluto is a planet? Question mark. At
yes.
All right, so now that we've told that amazing story about cigarettes and math.
Everyone has turned off the podcast by now.
Yeah, I don't even know if anyone still listens to this podcast. So yeah, we missed a month in November because I guess we were all busy, but we are here before the end of the year with a final 2016 podcast.
You know, actually, the year 2016 has an extra minute in it.
Oh, so one more celebrity has a chance to die.
Yeah, my joke was Betty White's going to die in that last minute.
No. Oh, no. The Oscars are going to be so goddamn long this year that they're going to have it like on two nights.
They got to put like another hour on it this year, I think.
No,
just the last like 2 weeks has been like crazy.
I just want to say, like, Did Debbie Reynolds like actually die of a broken heart? I mean, can that happen?
Kind of seems that way. Like she had a stroke, but you know, obviously that's like stress. It can be stress induced, and her daughter died. And
think about she was on her way to go visit her too.
Think about this. Like if she was having 15 minutes of CPR on the plane, and then they landed and go to the hospital. I mean, she was possibly not, you know, alive for like, you know, maybe up to 30 minutes. So even if they stabilized her, she probably had already incurred irreversible brain damage. So the couple of days was probably just the family having to make a decision.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And
so
that, maybe that is, that's a horrible thing, especially like, you know, when it's your kid.
Yeah,
that's not supposed to happen. So, yeah, maybe that's really sad, but it can't be a coincidence, or probably isn't a coincidence.
Sucks. Yeah, it's not good.
So speaking of Star Wars, that's one of our topics today.
That is like one of the worst and most depressing segues ever into a topic.
That's pretty
sad. So this person and her mom died.
Which brings us to Star Wars. Man. Well, hopefully no more celebrities die in 2016.
Cool. And we'll preface this with we're going to spoil the shit out of Rogue One. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want spoilers, then, I don't know, shut it off or something.
Okay. I'll put it this way. It's been, what, 2 weeks now? If you haven't seen Rogue One yet, you're not a Star Wars fan.
Apparently everyone has seen it from the box office. So here are the topics for this end of 2016 episode. The first topic is, yes, Rogue One. What we thought about it. Long story short, you guys both liked it, and I didn't actually care for it, so we can argue. Yay! Topic two.
I was about to start, but okay.
Oh, no, we always use the topics first.
You like listing topics and things, so just let them have it.
So our second topic. Our second topic is movie theaters. As I sat watching Rogue One, I was like, wow, I really hate the movie-going experience these days. So Parker lives in Texas, where they have the Alamo Drafthouse. So I thought the three of us could discuss movies in general. And Parker thinks that Jones and I are just old, and that's why we don't like it. But and our third topic. So as you all know, Jones and I are not Nintendo fanboys, but Parker is. So we'll discuss the Switch.
Asterisk.
With an asterisk Nintendo fanboy, Parker.
Are you like a lapsed Nintendo fanboy, like a lapsed Catholic or something? Or
that's a good description.
Okay, all right. Well, still, you're closer to being a fanboy than we are. So
yeah,
I watch videos online where they're talking about, you know, when the specs get revealed, or you know, like the clock speed and. Like, you can tell the people are really depressed. Like, people actually thought it was going to have power, and it's not. And I know, I just thought we should discuss that. All right.
Yeah.
So let's get started with Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
One of the best Star Wars movies of all time.
Out of eight? Is it the eighth movie?
Right? If you count the prequels, yes.
Of course you count the prequels.
Yeah, the prequels. The prequels aren't actually that bad.
Well, okay, so maybe we should be where Jones. You don't like Force Awakens, correct?
Correct.
All right. And I thought it was half of a good movie. Actually, it was on Stars, so I was watching it. Han Solo shows up at the 38-minute mark, so I would say it's about a third of a good movie. And Parker, your thoughts on Force Awakens?
It's the middle of the road for a Star Wars movie. I think it hits all the right notes of to make a Star Wars movie, but it's not the best one.
All right.
I would say I enjoyed the entire movie, though. I wouldn't say watch it up to the 38-minute mark and then turn it off.
Right.
One thing I'll say with it, I watched it again like in the last week since I, you know, seeing Rogue One. I'm like, oh, I'll watch all this shit again. So I watched that one again, and I don't know, it's like, I know, like, if people go back and listen to the podcast and stuff, it's like, you know, we were big, like, anti-bringing back the old characters, and I still agree with that to a large extent, but I actually think, like, Harrison Ford brings the most life Force Awakens of anybody in that movie. Like, he's got really good lines. There's a lot of, like, funny bits he has in there. I mean, I actually laugh quite a bit at the shit he says. Like, when he's in that showdown with those two gangs on either side of him, and he's, like, trying to, you know, brush them off. And, yeah, it's pretty funny. I mean, that whole scene is kind of stupid with, you know, the creatures on the ship, and, you know, he just conveniently happens to be there, but Han Solo himself being there isn't the problem. It's more like circumstances of why he's there, I guess.
I think that's why the movie started to lose me at that point, because it's like, oh, this big, conveniently, Han Solo has showed up, you know.
Well, that was, a lot of that movie is that, though. A lot of that movie is just, you know, happenstance, like, oh, a lot we of need a starship. Pan over, there's the Millennium Falcon. Mm-hmm. You know, or like Maz having the lightsaber. It's like, how does she have that?
See, like for me, it's like I look at Force Awakens and Rogue One, and like for me, Force Awakens is just like nostalgia, just horrifically implemented at just about every turn. Whereas Rogue One, I think they got nostalgia right about 85 to 90% of the time.
I would say I would agree with Jones on that. Is The Force Awakens basically rams the rose-tinted goggles onto your face while you watch that movie.
But then in Rogue One, you have that scene in the beginning with the family, and they're panning in on someone doing something, and they're like, make damn sure the blue milk is like in the center of the shot. That was
The thing with me is I didn't even really pay attention to that. And I'm like a big Star Wars geek, and I was just like, I didn't really even connect it.
I saw the blue milk immediately, but I didn't think anything of it. Yeah, I didn't think anything of it. I'm like, oh yeah, blue milk. It's like one of those, like, you know, they went to the space grocery store, and that's where you get your milk.
I know, but there are parts of it that reminded me of like one of our PASA movies. Like, the callbacks were so obvious, like the, like, hey, I don't like you. Like, they bring that guy back.
Oh, well, you mean the sentence on 12?
That guy was on a bus to get off the planet. And he didn't get blown up. You know,
that guy was part of my 10 to 15% that was done wrong.
That was embarrassingly masturbation-y fanboy stuff.
Yeah, there was 100% no reason. Because the thing about the blue milk, though, is it's in a kitchen. It's on the counter. That's normal for it to be. Right, These two characters, there's no reason that we know of for them to be there besides just, you know, wanking off to Star Wars
people. No, did you catch the part later on when they're landing on the beach and sneaking around? The two stormtroopers are saying, hey, did you hear the T-15 is scheduled for obsolescence? Oh, yeah, it's about time.
And yeah, that was one of my favorites.
See, again, it was like it's...
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with that.
Okay, all right.
But fair enough.
Yeah, you just gave really good background information about that ship.
Like, to me, the thing is, like, you got to think about where these movies take place in the time of the whole saga or whatever. You know, it's like Force Awakens, it's like 30 years after Return of the Jedi. I mean, a shit ton of time has passed. Whereas, like, Rogue One, literally the post-credits sequence is A New Hope.
I did really like how it ended. Like, it ended very quickly, I would say.
It was really quickly. Very efficient, yeah. But it's like, you know, so it makes sense for a lot of these beats to be there because, you know, it flows directly into A New Hope. It's not like there's 5 years or 10 years between them. It's like there's like
a couple weeks at most.
Or a week or whatever, you know. It's like, so that's why to me it's like it felt right most of the time, like when they did have these you know, touches that kind of connected it into those movies. It felt more organic to me, whereas Force Awakens, it was just like really forcing it in. Not to say that they didn't overstep a bit, like with the, you know, you best watch yourself guy and a couple other things like that, but
yeah. So that guy immediately jumped onto a spaceship and went to Tatooine. He's like, oh, I'm on this desert planet. I'm going to go to a different desert planet.
Yeah, and it's the exact same desert planet that the Death Star planets end up.
Yeah.
It does, that, it, this doesn't yeah. make sense.
I think that's, yeah, a, yeah. that's a problem Star Wars has. It's an enormous galaxy that completely centers around, like, three planets and one family.
Yes, yeah.
Well, I think that's what the Star Wars, like, what they call the Star Wars films is actually, it's supposed to be centered around the Skywalker family, whereas the anthology or the Star Wars stories are not.
I like how they're like, Rogue One, a Star Wars story, for all the people who don't realize it's a Star Wars movie. That was really helpful.
Well, they didn't have him in a crawl. That was a bit interesting at the very beginning of the movie. Or the normal theme. It had its own theme.
So here's a question. Why did Forrest Whitaker just like, oh, well, I'm just going to stand here and die? It's like, why didn't he just get on the ship with them?
I think he knew he couldn't get to the ship in time. Like, you could see him walking, and there was, like, no way he could have gotten there. So he was, like, instead of holding them up and getting everybody killed.
Saw Gerrera.
That's the guy that's, like, almost Darth Vader, except on the rep side.
Now, here's something. He looks completely different in the original trailer. So I wonder if one of the reshoots was they made him more of a cripple robot man to explain why he doesn't get on the ship.
Oh, that would make sense.
I was just reading something a short time ago where there was some interview with Ben Mendelsohn, who plays the director Krennic guy in Rogue One. And in the interview, he basically said that, there's like, the reshoots were very significant, was what he was saying. He's like, there's probably like 20 to 30 scenes in that movie where, depending on what shots they chose, the direction of the scene could have changed dramatically.
Huh.
So he was basically saying the movie could be a completely different movie if they, you know, chose different interpretations of scenes as they were shot.
Huh, interesting. So, yeah, it wasn't the original shoot, it was darker, right?
That's what everybody says, and then supposedly in the reshoots they put more Vader in. Maybe that's where they added in that sequence where Vader's, I don't know, got some personal tower or something, or maybe it was the thing at the
end. On the lava planet where the director is there and don't choke on your ambition.
Kind of weird to me too. It was unnecessary. But
the lava planet reminds me, at the end of a Rogue One discussion, we should also talk about where would the Emperor actually put a data center.
Okay.
Well, is it the Emperor? Would the Emperor actually decide that, or would just, like, the Empire Committee?
I don't know.
Maybe he's got, like, minions that deal with that shit, you know, because he's got to sit around on his throne and stare out into space something.
And put, like, lotion on his, like, scars.
Jones, you have to deal with data centers. I mean, I bet you'd like I bet you'd like them to be on, like, a paradise tropical island planet. But
that'd
would
be
they
badass.
Would they be there, though? So like you wouldn't put one in Hawaii because it's too far from everything.
True.
I think you would put it in a place that's easily defended.
Right.
Yes.
Like that place was I guess if the Empire can build a shield to go around the planet, pretty much anything is well defended at that point. I don't know why they would put it on a planet like that.
Well, the thing too is like that planet, like, you know, I can't remember if they really indicated where it is in relation to everything else, but a lot of times with data centers, you know, they put them kind of out in the middle of nowhere, you know, like out in the middle of Iowa or something like that, because then they're not near like a, you know, population center, you know, something that would be a target. You know, so they're more, I don't know, disconnected from things. So, and Microsoft started experimenting with submerged data centers underwater because of cooling.
Thank you for explaining what submerged means.
Yeah, I know. but like for cooling purposes and stuff like that. So
Hoth might actually be a good place for a data center.
Hoth be too cold, though.
Oh.
Yeah. No, you could like overclock your processors.
Yeah, I was going to say like the colder you get things, the faster you can run them. But what about Naboo? They've got all those waterfalls, you know, that people frolic in front of. I mean, that could be a great source of energy or electricity.
Yeah, but then you have to clean the Gungans out of your filters.
Yeah, that could be a problem.
Would be the filter cleaners.
Right.
it's just the mouth of a Gungan sucking in water.
Maybe the data center could be in this submerged Gungan city.
See? There you go. That would make sense.
And your way to the planet core.
Boss Nass could have it locked down.
Speaking of that data center, though, it's like when they transmit right the information up.
Yeah.
Like, I this is what I thought where they're going, because they said that they would need a special way to communicate the data because there's a lot of data for the plans, right? And so
needed
I thought that was
direct connection.
Yeah, they need direct connection, but they beam it up. But it's I thought that was like they were going to have to get off the planet eventually, but. You know, that didn't happen. But when they transmit it up to the ship, they get it, and they beam it to another ship, right?
No, they put it onto a disc, and then they hand that.
Okay. Well, yeah, I thought it got to a different ship, and then he transferred it to
the
hell a disc.
Because he's like, I know who to give this to.
So, question, though, is it only took, like, 10 seconds to transfer that, like, to actually transmit that? Why couldn't when they jumped out of light jump, get out of light speed and then transmit it again?
I don't know where they would have been transmitting it to. Maybe they didn't
transmit multiple copies of it.
Because weren't maybe they were getting jammed by the Star Destroyer at the beginning
of
the new hole.
Making multiple copies of it would make sense because they'd have to chase all the ships.
Yeah,
it's like when the president drives around. There's like three identical SUVs. It's like which one is he in?
But they didn't have time to do that either. I mean, they were
the one that's got
getting
the
out by the skin of their teeth. The thing I would be more interested in is it's
the
like,
one
well,
with the fake toupee.
It's like, okay, so that was Empire Data Center Planet or whatever.
Yep.
I would hope that they're like replicating their data somewhere else in the galaxy.
Yeah, oh, because yeah. All their data got blown up.
Yeah, because they blow it to shit at the end.
Yeah, it's actually interesting is because they so let's say they destroyed the plans there, because that was their goal, right, to prevent the rebels from getting it. Well, what if they have to fix it a couple years down the road? Now they don't have the plans to fix it.
You mean like when they rebuild it, like 15 years down the road?
Yeah, they get like they don't have the Ames or Clinton manual to fix the Death Star.
But that's where I would think that they were like replicating it, had off planet backups, something going on. I mean, shit. My company, we replicate our shit halfway across the country constantly. So I would think the Empire would do something similar.
Don't they say if your data doesn't exist in three places, it doesn't exist?
Something like that.
Well, you know what it should have been? He should have been like, my dear...
They have it stored in the cloud.
Yeah, my dearest daughter, I have uploaded the Death Star plans to GitHub. Download them.
It's on the SAWS, Star Wars Amazon Web Service.
it's a Creative Commons license that we designed this Death Star with.
You know what? I don't think it would matter if you open sourced those plans, because no one could actually build that besides the Empire at that point.
It's like your open source Pinhack board controller.
It's like, yeah, You'd be stupid.
No one's stupid enough to build a pinball machine, so who cares?
Exactly.
So, Parker, even though you liked the movie, was there anything you would change about it? I know there was one thing for me in particular that I would.
Rogue One?
Yes.
Remove the, I've got a death sentence on 12 systems, guys. Remove those. I think a little more explanation on actually transmitting the information. Because it's still like, they could have beamed it to multiple ships. Maybe the direct connection thing is like you actually have to establish a like handshake direct like Wi-Fi space connection to transmit that data.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of how I took it, was that they needed to have like a
and actually handshake down to the transmitter. I guess that's what it is.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of how I took it. I didn't take it like they had to like physically you know, attach or anything. It was more like they needed to have the shield opened up so that they could have the, you know, pathway to be able to get to the ship that they were trying to transmit to. And, you know, they knew what frequency to transmit it onto that ship or whatever. And so that's why they had to get it there. I guess that's how I interpreted that.
It makes sense.
I was just going to say, like, it's a civilization that has light speed travel, but they don't have quantum entanglement data transmission. But you would need to have a matching entanglement particle on either side for that to work, which the Rebellion wouldn't have.
Yeah.
One thing for me I would change in that movie, and I'm not like some big like girl power person or whatever, but it was like at the end it kind of bugs me when Cassian just magically like shows up and shoots Krennic to save Jin.
Oh, yeah, and at the end there?
That was just like so cliched, and I kind of thought it would have been cooler. I mean, if, you know, she obviously defeated him herself and then she was just on the beach like alone at the end. Like, I don't know why.
What would happen with the guy then? He just dies then?
It wouldn't matter because they'd already transmitted the data. So he could have shot her and it wouldn't have mattered. He would have still lost. Maybe, I don't know.
He's talking about the Cassian guy, but like the last thing we saw with him is he fell, so you could just be like, oh, okay, he died. You know, it wouldn't matter. But then, you know, he, of course, you know, claws his way up there and shoots Krennic. I don't know, it was just kind of like, really? Like, this chick's, like, kicked all this ass all this time, but then, oh, she's got to have the, you know, White Knight guy save her at the end.
See, I didn't like her character at all, so I guess I didn't even care about that. I thought she kind of sucked.
He didn't really care for her either, he said.
In Force Awakens, Rey was too good at everything. You know, like, what do they say, Mary Sue, like, flawless, you know, hero, blah, 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 I can do everything.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I still liked her because... You know, her performance made it work. She was, you know, I don't know if charming is the right word, but, you know, it worked. Right, Luke was kind of the same way, too. I mean, he knew how to do all the ships. He, like, knew what all the buttons did, but he was kind of annoying. So you didn't notice that much because there was some sort of flaw. Whereas Rey is, like, superhero.
And they both had, the two main characters in Rogue One had that whole... you don't know me. I have a checkered past, and I've lost everything. So I'm a badass. Like, both had that same attitude.
It kind of seems like it would have been better if... Okay, so here's what I would change in the movie, which is basically everything. So it could be like there's like this street orphan girl, kind of like Aladdin, but a girl, and it's whatever her name is, Theory of Everything, Jane Erso or whatever. And the Empire, or no, like the Rebellion, like picks her up off the street and they're like, we need your help. And she's like, I don't even know who I am. And then we find out about her father. Like, she was abandoned, like orphaned as a little girl. So it's like she's rediscovering her past. But then it's too much like, you know, Luke or Rey, you know, like the orphan kid that doesn't understand their past and they kind of are worked into it, I think would work better as a story. But again, Star Wars has already milked that cow dry.
With this one, it had like the a new thing for Star Wars that had the pre-title sequence. You know, there was no crawl, and it had that pre-title sequence when she was a kid. Like, I thought that was like really gripping. Like,
yeah, that intro
like,
shot
in like
awesome.
Right away. And I thought like Mads Mikkelsen was really great as her dad. He's kind of like the heart of the movie.
Yeah,
to some extent, and. I don't know, it's weird, it's like, yeah, like Dale said he didn't particularly care for Felicity Jones either, but I watched that movie and I'm like, God, she's probably like one of my favorite characters in all of Star Wars now. It's like for me, that movie was like shockingly emotional, much more so than any of the other Star Wars films. There's the scene when she's watching... the transmission that her father put through, like it's the first time she's seen her father in 15 years and she's seeing him on that like hologram thing and like the camera just like holds on her like reacting to it and it's like so good. Like, I don't know, it would just like stuff like that like really struck me and I actually, like, rolled a tear at one point in that movie. I can't say I've ever done that in a Star Wars movie.
Holy crap.
It's just, I don't know, for some reason it really, like, hit me on different levels. Like, the whole, like, father-daughter thing between them I thought was, like, really compelling.
It's very well done.
Do you realize that Alan Tudyk played a space pilot who died heroically in this movie?
Did.
Yeah.
He was pretty awesome, that droid.
I like the robot. I think the robot was more human than the humans. So he was more human than human.
Yeah, I guess so. I think he's just because he just had the best jokes.
He had some good lines in there.
See, I would have been... Okay, so it should have just been the robot, the blind guy, and a better version of the...
See, I didn't like the blind guy.
He was cool, except when he kept, like, repeating that phrase, over and over and over again.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. It was, like, 5 minutes straight of that, and I'm like,
it's just
grinding my brain to mush.
Yeah, I don't know how that got through, where somebody's like, yeah, that's okay.
So,
I mean, it had to have been, like, a minute that he did that for, it felt like. It was just crazy.
Oh, no, the best part of that is saying that and then walking on that beach, right? And so, like, the Force is guiding him to that switch, and he gets to the panel, and the Force was just like, well, I got you there, and he has to, like, fumble around on the panel, finding the switch.
Yeah, the Force is like, you figure this part out,
Apple. Yeah, you figure that part out.
Good luck, Daredevil. Well, did you guys ever watch that pretty lame Marco Polo show on Netflix?
No.
Oh, I never did watch that.
It's Netflix is like, hey, let's make Game of Thrones, except for it'll suck. That was basically what they were trying.
So it has no sex and, like, no violence in it?
Well, you know what's weird? Like, it does in the first season, but in the second season, they, like, cut way back on the gratuitous sex and violence, and it's like, oh, God, why am I even watching this? So it's like, yeah, it's like Game of Thrones, shitty plot, and way less gratuitous sex and violence. But there's this really cool character who's, like, this blind monk guy who kind of looks like an Asian Jesse Peckham. Which, well, you know,
interesting.
Jones cares. Anyway, so
I'm looking up who that is now.
Jesse.
You can find him. It's the internet. He's a pilot.
I have the power.
Oh yeah, you send a photo of the blind guy from Marco Polo to Jones, and he'll be like, "Oh, it does look like an Asian Jesse Peckham." Anyway, he's like far interesting character in that Marco Polo.
IMDb does not have a picture of him.
That's because he's blind.
That's not how that works, Ben.
They're like, he'll never even know. He's like, well, oh yeah, we uploaded your photo.
Well, I put blind guy from Marco Polo into Bing, and the first article that comes back is Marco Polo, despite naked kung fu, the script doesn't have the chops.
Well, that's true. There is a naked kung fu scene. That's like the second scene of the pilot episode, and then it just goes downhill from there.
I found a picture of him. Let's see here.
Like an over Skype. Yeah,
it's like an artist rendering or something.
Well, just be careful that you don't wreck our recording, you know. So, Well, why do you care? You don't know who Jesse Peckham is, Parker.
It's a slight Jesse Peckham resemblance there. Yeah,
it's totally
I can see
Jesse
it.
Peckham.
I can see it. Everybody anyway. Listening, like, is who the fuck is Jesse Peckham?
Well, he's a pilot, you know.
Marco Polo.
I want to make a T-shirt that says "I'm a pilot," you know, and like give one to like all the pilots I know.
No.
Anyway,
give one to the CIO because he's a pilot.
Oh.
How's that relevant, Ben?
Jesse Peckham.
I forgot what we were talking about. Oh yeah, so I really like I like that guy just because I don't know, he was kind of cool and he like had a stick. The thing is, like, apparently sticks can kill stormtroopers. Like the Ewoks killed them with sticks, and now this guy can kill them with sticks. It's like, what's the point of their armor? Like they're sweating for nothing.
Yeah, their armor is pretty useless because blasters go through it, sticks go through it. It's like. It is. I think Jones is right. It's for show and to be imposing, because that's all the Empire is about, is imposing, like building the Death Star, building Star Destroyers, giant things, and being imposing to make the commoners submit.
It's all about image.
Yeah.
Man, remember when we were playing Battlefield 1? Like, wouldn't it suck to have to wear, like, a wool uniform? Like, oh, it's summer in France, and you gotta wear this wool uniform, and also, you're dead.
And also, there's mustard gas.
Suddenly mustard gas. By the way, that's the worst part of that game.
Yeah. That does suck when the gas gets, yeah. And the shotgun. Anyways, the shotgun sucked, too.
So, Jones, so you said that you think Rogue One is the best Star Wars movie since Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, I think I would say that.
I would agree.
It's probably like the third best Star Wars movie.
Yep, that's where
I mean, you like it better than Return of the Jedi then?
Yeah, Return of the Jedi is very low on my list. If it's like probably above Force Awakens. And yeah, that's probably about where it sits.
Well, you are the world's only prequel apologist, so
that's right. Interesting.
No, prequels aren't insanely bad. They're just mediocre bad.
You know, at least they told different stories, which the new Star Wars movies really haven't yet.
They're very watchable, like for me, like the prequels. Like I can just put those on, watch them like anytime. You know, it's just I don't know.
As long as you don't watch like the love scenes in episode 2.
They're a lot more quotable.
Yes. See, they have that value, too.
It's kind of like Donald Trump. He says stupid shit, but you remember it.
That's true.
I hate
that's
a
good thing, Ben.
In Star Wars case, it is, because we get to quote the Emperor, like, all the time. There's not enough Emperor in the original trilogy.
Oh, that's the thing. I wish the Emperor would have been in Rogue One. Like, why didn't they just, like, slap some makeup on Ian McDiarmid and instead of, like, doing the CGI Peter Cushing thing?
They should have had the Emperor be at that place where Vader was. Like, it should have just been the two of them, like, I don't know, sitting around playing, like, Pinochle or something. Like, figuring out.
They're playing spoons.
Yeah, you know, whatever. They're playing Sabacc or something to make it Star Wars relevant. Oh. But, you know, they're, like, trying to... They're like,
yo, fish.
Plotting what their next move is going to be, you know? See, that would be
fun. You have any twos? No fish.
But your anti-romance comment on the prequels, I would argue that there's one scene where those two actually have some goddamn chemistry.
I sunk your battleship. Yes, I know. Okay, go ahead, Jones.
Sorry, Jones.
Romance.
That would be cool, too. So, you know. But,
I'm afraid my Scrabble word will be complete by the time your friends arrive.
There is one scene in Attack of the Clones, though, where they actually have chemistry. It's, they're sitting in that field, like, kind of discussing their views on, you know, politics in the galaxy or whatever. And he makes, like, some comment about, like, you know, I'd be far too nervous to tease a senator or something. It's like, I don't know, they actually have a little bit of chemistry in that one scene. And they also discuss, you know, their philosophies. I don't know, that actually, like, worked for me. But, yeah, almost everything else between them, they have, like, no chemistry.
Like,
does
yeah.
anyone...
Like, the whole scene... The whole scene where, like, she's, like, turns him down completely in front of that fireplace, and, like, she's, like, wearing almost nothing...
Yeah, I mean, how like, is he not supposed to be like, well, shit, I guess she's into me.
Exactly.
I mean, like, why would she bother putting on, like, this leather S&M corset?
Yeah. I mean, it looked goddamn good, but it's like, yeah, how can you not think he's going to get the wrong idea here? But
well, she can't because I'm a senator.
But he's a Jedi, too, so it's like two things. They're star-crossed lovers or something like that.
Yeah. Actually, the other scenes that actually worked for them, for some reason, ended up on the cutting room floor. Because I don't know if you've ever watched, like, the deleted scenes.
I don't want to watch any more of the prequels than I absolutely have to.
Oh, you're talking about, like, the dinner scene she has?
Yeah, there's, like, the dinner scene, and there's, like, that scene where they're at her family's place, and, like, Anakin's out in the front yard, doing something, and her and like her sister or her mom are standing, you know, by like the kitchen sink or whatever, looking out at him. But but that scene was like really good. I'm like, why is that not in the movie?
Wasn't it like
her sibling like teased her about him being her boyfriend, and she's like, oh no, I'm a senator.
Yeah, but it actually felt real. Yeah, it felt real, and it kind of like planted the seed of like maybe she'd be like, oh, maybe, you know, like I hadn't really thought of that before or something, you know, like, you know, it would have at least put that in there. But
oh, instead of going from I hate your guts to that's fucking the sunflower field.
She never said she hated his guts, but it's like there's basically it goes from the scene of like, yeah, I killed all these sand people, I killed children, I hate them, to yeah, like, oh yeah, let's go fuck in the fields or whatever.
That's because he's a bad boy now.
That's true.
She's like, oh yeah, my dad, my dad's gonna hate you. Let's fuck.
Maybe that was the turning point that she was waiting for.
Well, I'm glad you guys got a kick out of Rogue One. It didn't really rustle my feathers, but it seems like a lot of people enjoy it.
Yeah, it was a huge step up from Force Awakens, in my opinion, so
I would agree.
See what's next from them.
Do you think they'll ever make a Star Wars side movie that has nothing to do with elements of the main trilogy?
So
because we got Han Solo and Boba Fett, I think they're making.
Yeah, I would like to see a Battle of Jakku. But that kind of deals with the main trilogy as well. But I was actually really hoping 7 would be Battle Jakku. But whatever.
Yeah, I think they're going to have a really hard time ever pulling away unless they grow some balls. Because it's like, even this, it's like, you know, they felt the need to, like, add more Vader into it. You know, and it's like...
But the Vader scenes were pretty awesome.
Vader, the one at the end where he's coming after them when they're trying to get the plans off the ship, like that worked well. The earlier
hall monitor,
one,
best hall monitor ever.
Yeah, pretty much. But like the earlier scene, fairly pointless. I mean, basically all that does is just shows you, oh hey, Vader's around, so that when he shows up later, you're
and
like,
he,
okay,
and he cracks puns like his master.
Yeah, that scene that felt, I don't know, that felt a little off. To me, for like Vader, like just certain lines he had, and it's like poking a guy again. You know, it's like we've seen all this shit before.
Yeah, I think that was not mainly about Vader though. It was about the director, and because after that, the director gets 100% serious about stamping out this problem. Because like before, he's kind of like, you know, whatever, it was a security leak, but it won't matter when the Death Star is running. And then he meets Vader, and then after that, he's like, you know, was that afterwards that he kills all those scientists, or before?
Well, he was, like, all pissy because he wasn't getting credit for the Death Star, and, like, basically the director guy is just, like, this ambitious, like,
scientist,
operative, whatever, you know, and so he's like, I want credit, blah, 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 and Vader's like, shut up, bitch, go get it done, you know, like. I don't know. It just, that scene just seemed kind of, like, odd. It was just, like, they were sitting there, they're like, oh, yeah, we need to have more Vader in this movie. So here we're going to, like, jam.
And you think he would report actually more to the Emperor instead of Vader? Because why would Vader be overseeing the Death Star construction?
It's like, Vader is just, like, the enforcer guy. So it's like, yeah.
He's the muscle.
Yeah, but.
I just seems like so many things are done in Star Wars. Not because they make sense for the story, but because they make sense for fandom. Yes. And that's an issue I have with it. Because I'm not a super fan of Star Wars. So I'm not like, oh my God, it's the Blockade Runner. That's like a jacking off sound.
Ben, you got to eat the member berries, man.
No. Besides, Star Trek is a clearly superior film franchise.
Out!
Like, to me, for me, there's, like, fun nods in it, you know, like, where, like, in the battle, Red 5 dies, so then it's, like, when you watch A New Hope, and Luke joins up with the Rebellion, he's Red 5, and you're like, oh, that's how that spot opened up.
See, that's the thing, that is,
it's, like, deep kind of, cut type stuff, you know?
Yeah, but I like that, because... It's not intrusive. It's like it's kind of a passive reference.
Yeah, it's like something where if you're really geeky and into it, you'll pick up on it. It's like an Easter egg more than like slapping you across the face with it, but
yep.
Yeah.
So, shall we move on to the next topic?
Anyway.
Sure.
All right. The next topic is, or are, movie theaters.
I've been to one.
I've just
been. What are movie theaters?
There are these places where you have to take out a mortgage to buy a ticket. And then you get... then you have to sit through 30 minutes of television ads, ugh, then 20 minutes of trailers to watch a movie that's probably not going to be that great, and oh, and the picture quality is worse than your home television.
Well, if you get there on time,
that's where this is going to come in. That's where this is going.
You don't have to watch the commercials if you get there like on time, but the trailers, I will. To me, I think the trailers are the number one problem for me with the whole experience. I used to enjoy it when there'd be like two or three on the front, but now it's like seven, eight. No, it's just like, and you forget which ones you've seen before you've even seen them all.
I often forget what movie I've gone to by the end of the trailers.
And that's it's called autism.
I timed it when I watched Rogue One. It was 20 minutes of trailers from. So it's like, oh, the movie starts at 7 o'clock. No, it actually starts at 7:20.
And it's like, I wonder how effective trailers really are, because typically, unless...
In an internet age.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like, you know, like, unless I saw a trailer that I was just like, holy shit, that looks awesome. By the time I get to the end of the movie, I'm not going to remember what trailers I saw.
Yeah,
and I can't imagine I'm alone on that. So it's like,
no,
what value
right.
do
yeah.
they even have?
Well, I was thinking about that. When I was watching Rogue One, I think like only one of the trailers I hadn't seen before on the internet, and the premise of it was this boy is born on Mars.
Oh yeah.
And he gets into a long distance chat relationship with a girl on Earth.
Zorg doesn't want him to come back to Earth.
I haven't seen that trailer.
Right, I don't can't remember the name of it, but so he goes.
Oldman's in it. So.
Yeah, he goes from Mars to Earth, and he meets this girl, and they're like start having a relationship. But then it turns out, since he was born on Mars, he can't live on Earth, and that becomes the problem.
Yep.
Right. Well, so I'm like, oh, that's kind of an interesting idea for a movie. The thing is, I would have never voluntarily clicked on that trailer if I saw it online on like Dark Ride.
Okay. Yeah.
So they can, even though we watch all the trailers we want to see. We won't watch trailers that we are not interested in, but seeing it in front of a movie kind of forces you to watch it.
That's a good point. And you actually remembered that trailer.
Yeah.
I don't remember the name of the movie. It was like, it wasn't Life on Mars. It was.
You know it Life exists, on... and you know, like, Gary Oldman's in it. So if you were actually like, oh, I want to see that, you'd be able to track it down.
Right. I mean, I don't really want to see it, but I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting concept.
Oh, and... maybe. This would be a way for movie theaters to get extra ticket money, is if you like the trailer and you want to see that movie, you click a button that's like on your armrest and it prints out the ticket for that movie whenever it comes out.
Ah.
Bam! $1 million idea, movie theaters.
Well, here's the other thing. Like, so Parker, you went to college in Austin, so obviously you went to Alamo Drafthouse all the time.
The best movie theater of all time.
Maybe you should explain Alamo Drafthouse to those who don't.
So the Alamo Drafthouse is a small family-owned theater that's in Austin, and it's got a couple other locations like this one here in Houston now. But basically, it's a bar that has a giant movie screen in front of it for each theater. So it's got like half the number of people in it. Basically, you sit in a normal like movie chair, except there's a bar in front of you where you can order food and order... drinks and all that good stuff, and they do not tolerate talking or phones in the theater at all. And after, I think it's like after 6 p.m., no one under 18 is allowed in the theater, which is awesome.
So they kind of tailor like the ads or the trailers to whatever movie you're seeing.
Yeah, and I went to go see The Force Awakens, like they actually showed the Star Wars Christmas special, like clips of it at the very beginning. And
nice.
Yeah, we had to suffer through those But it was like actually a really bad cut of it because it was actually red tinted. So it was recorded from some 35 millimeter that was poorly taken care of, you know, copy.
Yeah.
So instead of watching a bunch of ads for local diamond stores, there's actually like they still play things in front of the movie.
Yes.
But it advertises more the ecosystem of Alamo Drafthouse.
Yeah.
Not just like, I'm your local insurance agent and come get a diamond here, Mountain Dew.
Yeah. And what I really like about them too is they actually have, they have all the modern, you know, digital stuff, but they also still have a 70 millimeter projector. They have a 35 millimeter projector. Like, I actually went there once and saw Jurassic Park, the original one, on 35 millimeter in that theater. Because that
print would be so beat to shit.
It was like actually the line where, you know, hold on to your butts. It went hold on to your butts, and that was it.
So you know why? I don't know why I remember that, but that line was on a Real Change.
Yes, exactly. So, and so the Real Change was fucked up.
Well, what happens is every time they ship a print from a theater to another theater, you lose two frames on the Real Change. Because when you put the movie together, you have to connect the Real
Change. Oh, so it had a lot of cuts right there. Yep. Huh?
So, well, what happens is you put down one piece of tape to join two reels, right?
Yep.
Then when you break down the movie to ship it, you can't re-spool it with multiple layers of tape, so you cut the frame off either side of that, so you lose two frames.
So that one probably a lot of cuts there.
Right, so every time that movie print is broken down and taken out of a theater, you lose two frames on the Real Change.
So why did the theater – that seems like oversight in the theater to make that right there and not do it in some non-interesting scene, you know? Like, make it like a minute after or a minute before. I don't know.
They don't really have a choice.
Well,
they have to splice it where the cut is it between the reels.
Well, let's say it takes up three reels, right? But the third reel is like only like half empty.
Well, it's like six reels.
Okay, six reels. But let's say the sixth one is only like, you know, has a couple spots left for to spool up. You could
space
it out.
It
all down.
It's when they have a joke on Family Guy, and they're trying to fit the time. So it's like you see like Peter Griffin gets hit in the head with a baseball bat like six times or eight times. And it's like you can tell they're just trying to like pad out the spacing and get to the next joke.
Yep.
Kind of the same thing.
Parker, you'll be able to go see Dunkirk in 70 millimeter then.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that, actually.
It'd be awesome.
Did you see Hateful Eight in 70 millimeter?
I did not see that in theaters, unfortunately.
Oh,
and Ben, just so you know, your movie is called The Space Between Us.
Oh, that's a good title.
It is. And it has Carla Gugino in it, too.
Oh, that's the Earth-Mars, like, long-distance fuck relationship.
Yes, that is the alternate title.
Do you think
space fuck relationship, huh?
Do you think they're communicating with radio waves, or maybe there's quantum entanglement in it? Because what is it, 15 minutes?
That takes quite a while.
15 minutes?
Yeah, 15 minutes.
I'll have to watch The Martian again.
It would be twice that, because you'd be like ASL.
That
would take 15 minutes to get to Earth, and then it would take 15 more minutes for it to get back to you.
Why in The Martian, you know, he had to work out that alternative communication scheme so that they could speed up communication.
He overclocked the
processor.
Still
be limited by the speed of radio waves.
Yeah, he overclocked the speed of light.
No, it was just like he worked out, you know, where they could communicate more than like yes, no in a conversation.
Yeah, but you would still be limited to the speed of transmission.
I understand that. I'm just saying come up with ways to be able to communicate more in one transmission.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Instead of being yes, that answer is correct.
This kid on Mars sends a dick pic to the chick, right? And he's sitting there waiting for like 30 minutes. He's like, oh my God.
Or
did
boob.
I go too far?
Yeah.
Did I cross a line?
Yeah, and you wouldn't know, you know? It's kind of like when you text somebody and you're like, oh, shit, did I text them too soon? Did I text them too late? And that would be even worse if you're living on Mars.
And then, like, you get a text the next day. Oh, sorry, my phone was dead.
Yeah.
Like
maybe, forgot about the time change.
Yeah, maybe he should tiptoe into the dick pic a little bit, you know? Like, maybe not lead with that, but, you know, build up to it a bit.
The thing is, if you were a human born on Mars, would you grow up smaller than a human?
Taller.
Because there's less gravity?
Would he even know what women are? I guess this is why we need to watch this movie, because...
Well, I assume he has a mom, you know? Like.
Yeah, but did she, like...
No, he's just orphaned on the planet.
Yeah, like, isn't he basically, like, grown in a beaker or something? I don't know.
I didn't get that from the trailer.
It kind of seemed like he was kind of like this experiment, you know, like, yeah, like maybe he was an orphan or something. I don't know.
So so what happens now is they have reserved seating.
Yes.
But here's the gimmick that sucks. If you go to the theater and just buy a ticket, you're going to have a shitty seat.
Yep.
And yep. Then, but because if you buy it online, they charge you an extra $1.50 convenience fee, you know, because it's cheaper. No, I'm sorry. It's more expensive to have a computer do it than, like, you know, someone taking your ticket. Stupid. So it's kind of like it's like a tax on not having a shitty seat, this convenience fee. And it's, I think $14.50 to see Star Wars. And with a convenience fee, it would have been $16. And it wasn't even a 3D.
It was like $10 for me to go see it. And I'll put it this way, is I think what it is people who go to the draft house know it's assigned seating, and so you just get it online. Because, like, when you go there, there's not really a box office place to go. I mean, there's a place you can buy tickets at, but it's not like a booth with, like, the speaker that you can barely fucking hear the person speaking over the speaker. Blah, blah, blah.
I don't know what that is, but...
You know, the speaker that the person's talking out of.
We don't have that here. People don't have to sit behind, like, glass windows.
Yeah, when you're, like, an AMC, and you're trying to order your ticket, and you can't understand the person who's talking to you.
Usually the person is standing behind a counter, and I speak to them.
That's because we don't live in a crime-filled land like in Texas.
Maybe, so I was going to say, are they standing behind, like, bulletproof glass, and they have,
well,
like,
usually they're outside. Like, outside the front of the theater.
That's where the tickets are?
Oh, that's more like old school, like when you're watching old movies in the 50s and they have the ticket guy, like out in front of the theater.
Yeah, that's actually not most of the non-draft house-y like places are here.
It would be like, I would like 4 tickets to see Bridge on the River Kwai. That will be 80 cents.
I did have that.
That is my entire life savings.
I did run into that issue with, you know, like not having any good seats when I went to see Arrival on opening weekend, because I like to go on Saturday mornings is kind of my prime time to go to movies now. So I went thinking, this will be fine. I get there and it's like, every seat except for like 4 in the very front row were gone. So I actually didn't go to the movie. Because I was like, well, fuck this. So I waited and saw it the next day, and I had to go and order my ticket online and all that shit to get a decent seat.
So I got a thing is, Ben, how big is your TV?
65 inches.
And Jones, how big is your TV?
60.
I have a used 34-inch TV. I think this is what it's boiling down to, is the experience at the movie theater for me is way better, and the movie experience for y'all is shittier than what's in your living room.
I was thinking about that when I was watching Rogue One, and maybe it's because I was like in the fourth row, because, you know, same reason Jones just mentioned, the tickets. And that was an hour and a half before the showing. Of course, that was on Monday, so all the government workers had Christmas Day observed off. But, like, I was looking at, like, I don't know why, but this, I think that movie was in flat, like 1.85:1. But there was still, like, black at the top and the bottom. Like, maybe they have, like, different, you know, like, wide format or something there. And I was like, the black levels in the movie, they look like they were washed out into the non-image areas. And I was thinking, my LCD screen has better black levels than this. And an OLED TV, which you're looking at, Jones, sure as fuck has better black levels than that.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Like, so that's what I'm saying is...
Level of image contrast is more comparable to, like, a DLP, which is what you have right now, Jones.
It might be like, I need to buy a better TV, maybe I'll be on y'all's side of this argument.
Because, like, I'm probably very soon going to be getting an OLED TV, so that'll, yeah, probably make it even worse, because going to the theater will be like, Jesus, this sucks ass. But, I mean, generally, like, right now, I don't mind, like, once the movie starts, I'm usually perfectly happy with the experience. It's just everything around it that
it's like flying.
Yes.
Everything about flying sucks except for the flying itself, unless you have, like, a really shitty seat.
No, I'm kind of fat, and I don't really fit in the seats too well, so the flying sucks.
I mean, there's definitely been improvements at the theater. You know, like, now you got the swank reclining seats, which are nice. You've got way more leg room. You know, you don't have to worry about people kicking your chair anymore. Like, all that stuff's, like, great improvements that, you know, they've eliminated those things, which I used to hate about going to the theater.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just, like,
well,
the absurd amount of crap on the front of the movie is probably the number one problem. And then, yeah, like, just the price. Like I don't know how, like, a family of four goes to see movies. Like,
the credit card.
I know, but, I mean, it's just, like, it's kind of crazy, like, how much, you know, like, if you were to go at night, like, you know, like, just go to, like, a 6 p.m. show on a Saturday, you know, like, wife,
oh, and they keep,
couple
they keep
of kids.
Lowering. Like, remember around here, Jones, like, a matinee went until, like, 5:30?
Yeah, they keep moving that, yeah.
it keeps going down, so, like, a 4:30 is considered, like, an evening showing now.
Yep.
It's ridiculous. I think about that, like, when I go to the grocery store, Jones, like, so Jones and I both, like, neither of us are married, and we both live alone. So I go to the grocery store, and I buy, like, a week's worth of groceries, and it's, like, 60, 70 bucks.
Yeah,
And I'm like, Jesus Christ, like, what if there's, like, four of me?
Yeah.
It's the same thing, like, even if you can afford something, you need to, you know, you have to think about it in the perspective of, like, how would this be affordable for, like, a family of four that statistically probably makes less than me as well?
Yeah.
And the answer is that it isn't, and that's why, even though the box office is always, like, a record, like, it's a record, $11.4 billion this year, six of which is, like, Disney, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But the thing is, those people only go to, like, one or two movies a year because it costs, like, $80 to take your family to a movie. And I think that's where the problem is. Like, these nice theaters, they're, like, cool experiences, but they seem more like going out date experiences. Like, oh, you can get a meal at the theater and you can watch this movie, and it's like a night out.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, just being cheap entertainment, like, go to the movie theater for $7, spend 2 hours there, watch a movie, and then do something else. Like, it tries to become an experience in and of itself, and I think that's driven the price up.
I would agree, except that the Draft House is, comparatively to other typical theaters here, is cheaper. And, like, the beer is, like, the same price you would pay at a bar, and the food is the same price you'd pay at a tavern or a pub. So it's...
Yeah, the same thing is true of, like, Palace Cinema, although the chicken sandwich I had on Monday was very overcooked. My chicken sandwich with fries was way less than the ticket. That was like $10, which is comparable to what you'd pay at, like, you know, Red Robin or something. Not as good, but
yeah, that's what I was gonna say. That was, like, the surprising thing when we did the Cinema Bistro, I think they call it, where you can get, like, actual food, and it's, like, good food, like, you know, like, well, when they cook it right, I guess. But yeah, I was surprised at, like, what the prices were like, because, you know, you always think about, like, how much they charge for, like, a goddamn popcorn and soda. At the movie theater,
yeah,
but
a
baby
sized piece of pop or a bucket of popcorn is, like, you know, $20.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy, but it's like, yeah, the stuff where it's like, oh, this is, like, real, like, food, like, decent stuff, like, you know, you can get, like, wraps and burgers and pizza,
fish,
whatever. It's all very, you know, comparably priced. So, yeah, like, what you would find, yeah, like, at Red Robin or, you know, like,
well, maybe the Dane, what happens there is, like, it, how do I put this? Like, if, like, oh, look, I got a thing of popcorn. It's like $6. Like, that seems like a lot of money.
Yeah.
So they can take, like, 10 cents of popcorn and, like, sell it for $6. You know, so they can get away with, like, a 5,000% markup on that or whatever it would be. But the thing is, they can't apply that same markup. So if you have a $10 food, that means it costs $3. So they can't apply that same markup to the food because it already started as more expensive.
Yeah. And
but that's the thing, like, well, like, with beers, I think I mentioned this to you years ago, Jones, it's like, if you sell someone, you're only going to sell them one 40-ounce soda
yes.
for a movie at, like, way over price. But someone who drinks beers might drink two or three beers during the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So even though you're making less of a markup on each one, that person will buy more of them.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, I don't know. It's interesting. It just feels like theaters are, you know, like this dying thing. You know, it's like attendance keeps going down, prices keep going up. It's like that's obviously not sustainable.
Well, they're talking about like a lot of studios are actually looking into like you could rent a new release in the home like 2 or 3 weeks after it comes out in theaters.
Yeah.
And basically they already want to do it. The main thing is they're having to negotiate with the movie theater chains. That's the holdup. See, here's the thing. Like,
why do they have to negotiate with the movie theater chains?
Because they've got deals already worked out with them for like distribution and things.
Oh,
the thing is, ultimately,
shooting cars.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why there aren't NC-17 movies is because there's entire chains that absolutely will not distribute the movie. So the chains actually have a lot of control because it's not like it used to be in the old days that most of the chains were owned by the movie theater and the movie companies, so the movie studios. That's not so much the case now. So there's actually a tug of war. But here's the thing, you work with like I assume mostly like married family people, Jones.
Yes.
Most families don't go to movies and they consider something to be out when it's on video.
Yes, that's pretty true.
They say, when's that come out? They don't mean in the theater. They mean, when can I watch it on video? So here's the thing, like maybe the rental, like if you had like a week two rental of something, I mean, I think you could maybe get $25 for it, tops. Like if it's like 50, it's never going to work. But the thing is, it's like, oh, well, if the whole family goes to the movie, we get like $60. But the thing is, if they're already not going to your movie,
you're getting $0.
Yeah, well, or half of a red box, you know, like 50 cents, right? So yeah, it's like it's kind of like Steam, like, Steam made it easier to download games. So if like the pirates are already not downloading your games, like why don't you just make it easier for the people to buy the games and then they'll do it. So I think home release is like that's the next golden goose for Hollywood that they're going to fight right up until the point where it makes them a shitload of money.
Yeah, because I mean people like us, you know, like yeah, if it was $25 and we could see, like let's say we were like, fuck it, we're not going to Rogue One at the theater, but like tonight, you know, we could sit here and rent Rogue One for $25. You know,
yeah, get some friends together.
Yeah, we'd pop over to one or the other's place, get one or two other people there, split the cost, or you know, order food, whatever,
and that's the thing,
be a good time. You know,
you can get absolutely shit faced too because you're already home. You don't have to drive from the theater, so you can't. Because when you're at the theater, you know, you can only have like two beers, and that's it. Because any more than you have, like, you know, you can get, you know, too drunk to drive home. But if you're at your house, you just get absolutely plastered.
Yeah, see, if the movie's terrible, yeah, you just get hammered quicker. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, it would be even crazier if they made, like, the movie experience and you can't pause it. Once you press play, you cannot stop it.
Like, streaming movies off Amazon is better than a Blu-ray. Because
oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah, because like Blu-rays, they at least have ads. Sometimes they're unskippable, like you can only fast forward to them. Yeah. But you rent a movie off Amazon. What is it? $5 for a new release in HD? It's really reasonable. It might be $6, and you can, when you push the start button, the movie starts. There's no ads. It's like that's the best experience. And like, yeah, I very rarely buy Blu-rays anymore. I mean, and since most movies are barely worth it watching once. I just watch them on Amazon for $6.
Yeah, I own zero Blu-rays.
I cannot say that, but I'm looking at a couple of bookcases that are mostly full of them. But the one thing that has changed, like I've always been a pretty staunch advocate of physical media, but like in the last year or so that started to change with like the Xbox One and stuff. But then also like lately with movies, started just paying attention to like Vudu, like Walmart's streaming platform or whatever, and they have sales like all the time. So a lot of times you can get like the HD version of a fairly new movie for like $5 or $7 or something. So it's like, so basically for what I could rent this for, I can just, like, buy it, you know? and then it doesn't take up any space, and you know, I can just, I don't have to put a disc into anything. I just fire something up and click a couple of menu items, and boom, like Ben said, you know, you're watching the movie. You don't have to like traverse some menus and skip some trailers and shit like that to get to what you want to do. So,
oh shit, there's a scratch on the disc.
Yeah, so it's like, it is interesting, because even somebody like me, who is like a pretty staunch like physical media person, even I'm like caving, because there's compelling reasons to do it. It's like, oh, like Ben said, you click the button, boom, the movie starts playing. You know, you don't have to wait. Well,
you see that with when people justify software piracy. It's like, oh, I pirate this game, I don't have to deal with the DRM, right? I can play it offline. And,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, experience, people will gravitate toward it.
It still doesn't make you more, like, you're still a dick if you do that.
Yeah, he's not counting that. He's just saying that it's like, if it's easier, people will seek out the easier path.
I guess so.
No.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I will agree with that.
Because I know, like, when I remember looking at Steam sales at some point, yeah. Like, what was it, one of the Arkham games? Like, you would just see the message boards or the forum for that game on there, and it was just riddled with people where they're like, don't buy this thing because the DRM is like bullshit, because because it was like, even though you were buying it through Steam, you still had to deal with the, you know, publisher's DRM, and it was just, sounded like a nightmare. And so I'm like, yeah, it's like a good deal for that game, but I'm like, fuck it, I'm not dealing with that. So, you know, I didn't buy it.
Super Mario Run doesn't work unless you have an internet connection. Now, while I think, you know, people that complain about always-on internet, it's kind of like complaining about always-on electricity.
Yeah.
But a mobile game like that, like, if you're, like, the people those games really, you know, cater to is, like, you know, like, that's why it's so big in Japan, is because everyone uses mass transit, mm-hmm. unlike here. But, like, what if you're in the train tunnel and it goes, you know, under, like, some rocks or something, and then, boom, you lose your cell signal, and then you can't play.
Most of the trains have Wi-Fi, so.
Okay. Still, I mean, yes, it's one of those things where, like, well, just like Napster versus CDs, or Steam versus piracy. It's like, once you make something easier, there's no going back.
Yep. I would agree with there, too. Once you break down that barrier, there's no turning back on that.
Just like Uber. It's like, I remember the first time I used Uber, I'm like, wow, cabs are obsolete.
Yeah, exactly. and it showed up on time.
I know. Well, why can't cab companies? What? Oh, we used it last night. Like, I've never waited more than 5 minutes here in Madison for an Uber. But oh god, what was? I think I ordered a cab when I went to England, because if the amount of time I'm going to leave my car at the airport exceeds the cost of two cab tickets, then I just take a cab. You know?
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, because you park your car at the airport for 2 days, 2.5 days, and it counts as 3 days, so it's like $24, which is like 1.6 cab rides. Anyway, I called in one time, I think it was Green Cab, which sucks, and I'm like, yes, I like to schedule a cab for like, I don't know, 9:30 in the morning. They were 20 minutes late, and then they picked up another fare, and it sucked. But yeah,
the only thing about Uber is they need to have you have to book something to know how much it costs to go there.
Parker, if you ever get a bigger TV, maybe your opinion will change.
Maybe.
Yes.
Jones, you should totally get that OLED TV, and then we can have Super Bowl day.
I need to get on that. I was going to go over this week, but then it was just so busy at work, I never managed to escape at lunch. So I will get one of these days soon.
Actually, also, I would need something that automatically makes really good fish and chips. And then my movie experience would be at home.
You see what you do, Parker, is you put out a personal ad and say, looking for a woman who can make excellent fish and chips. And then once you have that and your TV, then you're good to go.
She'd probably be British.
Be pretty like, sweet.
Hello, governor! My name is British woman!
There we go. For me, it could be Felicity Jones.
You can't imagine a British woman's name, Ben?
Okay, let me imagine.
Could be Felicity Jones. She could be mine, and then, like, you know, we could get married, and she wouldn't even have to change her name.
But she sounds like, yeah, but the, what if what if you're in one of those states that doesn't allow cousins to get married?
But we're not cousins.
But what if they think you're cousins? You could be brother and sister, for Christ's sakes.
I guess that could be possible. I'm pretty sure it isn't.
I don't know if you do this or not, Jones, but on your if you have an online dating profile, you should just say, I like watching Gilmore Girls. That's all you would need.
Really? Because I do. I like that show. It's good.
You should burn your sister. Like, what was – so at work, Max was
– to put out the beacon. What was, dude who likes Gilmore Girls.
Like, Karen was, like, talking about Gilmore Girls reunion. Like, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, And then, like, she leaves a room or goes to lunch or something, and Max is like, ah, Christ. First, my fiancé makes me watch that, and then I have to hear it about it at work.
Oh, man. I watched that whole reunion thing on, I think it was either the Friday night or the Saturday after it came out, so.
Here's the thing, though. It's like, if there's a guy who likes that shit, then the woman will just think he's gay. So you can't win.
You're just fucked. So that show is funny, though. It's got really good writing and.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't
fucking comment. You haven't even seen it.
Well, I have, like, what, 10 copies of Dirty Dancing?
Yeah, so you're one to talk. But
yeah.
You even have a computer game of Dirty Dancing.
Yeah, I have a board game of it, too. Yeah, I still need to find the Beta Max version of it.
Anyone that listens out there, if you have a copy of Dirty Dancing on Betamax, send it to Ben Heck at P.O. Box. Go fuck yourself. Madison, Wisconsin, 78932.
It all started when we bought that VHS copy of Dirty Dancing for Port Washington.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, oh, this must be Ben's favorite movie. And it's like, it's not my favorite fucking movie. And so then everyone just started buying me copies of it. So I have it on Laserdisc, and I have the PC game, and it's like,
he's got a shrine of it in his living room.
So, you know, I think it's an okay movie. I like it. I think of it as a prequel to Roadhouse.
There you go.
That's one way to put it.
Too bad I couldn't, like, see into the future when I was, like, 10 years old, because, like, my mom watched Dirty Dancing constantly, and that was back when we had Beta, so I'm 99% certain that we had a Beta copy of that
Betamax.
Hmm?
So your family owned a Betamax player?
Yes, we actually had that, and then we eventually got a VCR. Years later.
I think we had a second-hand VCR we bought at a garage sale.
Yeah, so it was weird. Like, the first experience I had with, like, home video was Beta. So it was weird when we had to go to VHS and have the bigger tapes.
And worse quality.
Yes.
Beta only hold 1 hour on a tape?
The first versions, yes, but then they had
the extended play tape. Idea with them too at some point, because
it's like long plays on vinyl where they were able to like slam 26 tracks on a vinyl record, but quality suffered. But doesn't matter.
So I guess there's people that clean their vinyl records by putting wood glue
on
them.
I've seen that, and I've actually tried it before with a old record that I didn't really care about. Mixed results. The best way actually to clean your
was it the Dirty Dancing soundtrack?
No, I actually don't remember what it was. The best way to clean your record I found, though, is basically using like a it's a substance that breaks the surface tension of water. There's a name for it.
Hey, I just checked. You can get Dirty Dancing vinyl soundtrack for $15 from Amazon.
Is it on Prime?
Oh, it's included with my Prime membership if I just want to listen to the
there
songs.
You, go.
You know, to relive the good old days.
Is that in quotes? Good old days, end quote?
No, I never saw that.
Anyways.
I think it's It's got Jerry Orbach in it, for crying out loud.
Yeah, that movie like burned into my brain because it was like 1 year my mom watched that all the time. Then the next year, I think it was Steel Magnolias all the time. Then it was Pretty Woman all the time.
It was the movie for that for me would be Free Willy, because when we lived in California, our neighbor would take care of us when my mom and my dad were at work, and they basically had a VHS tape of Free Willy, and I think I watched that movie like 8 bazillion times.
I do remember my brother and his girlfriend, at some point they bought like Wayne's World on VHS, and then I like borrowed it from them, and like one
never
summer, yeah, and one summer that was basically played like constantly on a loop.
Oh, there's something. Is a VHS tape that's like an A-track, so it just keeps going.
Yeah, there's actually
$100 idea there.
Buck
$250.
Yeah,
there was a high HD VHS tapes that released like in 2003.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, it was like basically digitally recorded in MPEG-2, but it was like pretty short-lived format. Yeah. Well, shall we move on to our third topic?
Sure.
Yeah,
apparently, I can buy Creed for $7.49 right now.
Assassin's
Creed? Just Creed.
Creed, the really bad band from, what, the early 2000s, right?
Oh, the Apollo's Son movie.
Oh.
Wasn't Creed, like, a Christian group or something?
Kind of, sort of?
Yeah.
Definitely, maybe.
Yeah. You know, on the long list of sort of Christian mainstream, I definitely like Amy Grant.
So by the way, I was listening to the classic rock radio channel here in Houston, and Creed came on. And I'm like, I am not that old yet.
It could have been worse. It could have been Nickelback.
Oh, the day that Nickelback is on the classic rock channel, I will probably pull into oncoming traffic with my Jeep and ram someone head on.
Well, it could be worse. Like, what if you are the person? Like, what if you're like Billy Joel and you're like, oh, I used to date Christie Brinkley, and now I'm on the classic oldies channel. Then you just pull out the gun and finish it off.
Sounds terrible.
A little bit.
Billy Joel shouldn't have to go through such trauma.
I sure hope I haven't, you know, jinxed
you. Better not,
he'll die. Fucker. He'll die in the last minute of 2016.
Yeah, no shit. This year's been pretty goddamn bad. We still got like a day left of this.
A day and a minute left.
It fucking suck. If I wake up tomorrow and read that.
The New Year's ball will like land on Clint Eastwood.
Oh, no!
That would kill him. He'd probably just like, he'd probably like bounce off his shoulder or some shit.
It hit him in the head, and
like,
he was just like, yeah, he was just like, yeah. No, what happens is it'll fall down, he'll pull out his twin six shooters, you know, that he always keeps on him, and then shoots it out of the air. Because, like,
he's
not the only person in New York that has a concealed handgun carry, because he's Clint Eastwood. Because
he's Clint Eastwood. Yeah, he gets a free pass.
Yeah, he goes to the airport metal detector. It's like, oh, we didn't realize you were
Clint
Eastwood.
Please,
it's actually funny you say that. Is here in Texas,
we didn't realize
here in Texas, if you have a concealed handgun license, you don't have to go through the metal detector when you go to the government Capitol building here in Austin.
Because they already know you're
packing heat. Yeah, they know you're packing heat, and they know that you're licensed, so less likely to, you know, do something.
You're probably not a douchebag.
Doesn't everyone in Texas carry guns around? I mean, wouldn't it be easier to profile people who don't have guns?
What happens is, you come out of the womb, they give you your birth certificate, right? And a 22 LR six-shooter pistol, and a bottle of whiskey.
Yes, I mean, like, down there...
And
yeah, but like down there, are you more like suspicious of somebody if they don't have a gun?
We're more suspicious of people who are afraid or unwilling to shoot a gun. I would agree with that.
What if you're not afraid, but you just don't give a fuck about?
Then we don't. That's the mantra of people who live in Texas is I don't give a fuck. So
that's me. I have no interest in shooting one, but I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Whatever. But it's like,
you are an honorary Texan, Jones.
Ow.
Have you ever fired a gun, Jones?
No. When I was young, really? I had a BB gun, but that doesn't count. So, yeah, I've never fired like a real gun.
Oh, huh.
Well, come down to Texas. We can change that.
Hard liquor and handgun night.
Liquor and handgun night. Yeah.
and ribs.
And ribs. Yeah.
And draft house.
Though Texas is more known for brisket than ribs.
Ben tried to get a brisket last night and failed, but I guess that wouldn't have happened if we were in Texas.
Yeah.
To run out.
How do you run out of brisket?
Didn't make enough.
All right, so our third and final topic is the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, that's a silly name, but they're the kings of silly names.
So Parker is more of a Nintendo fanboy than Jones and I, so we thought we'd get his take on it. Also, we could talk about technical stuff, like how it won't be as powerful as a console if it runs on batteries. And
yeah, so me being a fanboy is just because I like their games. I think Nintendo makes really, really good games for basically anyone of any age can play. I really like the Zelda series. I've been playing the Zelda series since the original NES game when it came out. Well, when I was able to play it, which is around 94, 95 is when I first played it.
Yeah, because aren't you like the same age as that game?
That game is the same age as me. And actually, I have a cartridge that was manufactured in October 87. So, yeah.
You know, I bought that game in Portland. And I tested the battery, and it hadn't gone down that much.
Yeah, mine actually was alive, too. I did replace it before I started playing it, mainly because, to save the games on it. But, yeah.
Well, people have done the math. Based off the amount of battery drop in 30 years, people estimate that cartridge could actually... Original cartridges might still save data up until, 2070.
Jeez.
Well, the 3.3-volt battery, mine had dropped down to, 3 volts in 30 years. Anyway, yeah, Zelda. So do you think they're going to, I bet you anything that they don't release Breath of the Wild for the Wii U.
I would.
They'll push that onto the
Switch. Yeah, I would agree. Well, I don't think it would really matter. Because they did the same thing with Twilight Princess for the Wii. And they released it on the GameCube, and they released it for the Wii, but almost no one bought it for the GameCube. And I think that's going to be... If they release on the Wii U, it won't matter.
So how bullshit do you think were the NES Classic shortages? I mean,
I think they're pretty BS, just because you can buy stuff that already does that on, AliExpress and eBay all day long.
They have a history of limiting supply to create demand, and this time, don't they want money? They said that only 197,000 of those actually were sold at retail in America.
Okay, when you say that though, 190,000, that is a lot of units still. And you got to look at, if you take Nintendo's side in this, they want to make money on hardware, and so they.
And I think that's their problem, that they care too much
about that. Yeah, I would agree with that with you there. But it's they don't want to lose money on the hardware, so they don't want hardware to sit in their warehouses. They don't want to be Atari in 1977, basically. And,
Or the Dreamcast.
Or the Dreamcast with Sega. Sega. And so they were like, okay, we know we can sell this amount, and so they will make that amount, and... They underestimated how many they're going to sell, but they probably don't care because they're like, okay, we cleaned out our warehouse. Let's just make some more at that point.
Yeah, it ensures that every single unit gets sold.
So I'm going to bet you that's more what it is. It's not really they're on purposely making shortages. It's just they're doing that to make sure they don't have leftover stock because they saw their greatest rival in the 90s, Sega, fall for that reason. And that's one of the reasons why Atari fell in the late 70s, early 80s. And then when you look at Nintendo versus, you know, Sony and Microsoft nowadays, is they're the small guys, you know, in the hardware department and actually in just units sold in the software department too.
Think about the PlayStation 4. The PlayStation 4 is the fastest selling console in history. And like,
well, it beat the
you know
Wii.
Why? It's because yeah, Sony builds as many units as people
yeah,
can
but
buy.
Yeah, then when you look at the stocks, like Sony tanks when they're like, oh, our X department is losing or hemorrhaging money because
oh yeah, they have too I much agree. Stock. Sony is corporate. Well, yeah, and like besides PlayStation 4, their company is like in the shitter. Is Jones still here?
I am.
Yeah, he just lit this
book. All right. I just wanted to make sure you weren't
dead. I'm alive. I'm looking at hard drive space, seeing if I have room to fit the season pass on it.
He bought it!
I didn't buy it, but it has this Rogue One Scarif thing, which, I don't know, makes me happy looking at it. Didn't you?
You need to get, like, a bigger hard drive.
Anyway, it's... I don't really, I've never really cared too much about the hardware that Nintendo's built. All I care about is the software. That's why whenever they come out with a piece of hardware that has a game I want to play, I will buy it because that's the game I want to play. An example is like Zelda is no one makes a Zelda clone or something that's like a Zelda game. There's nothing else like it.
Mm-hmm. Because they make so things the only that way are better than Zelda.
I wish, but no one does.
Bethesda, anyone?
But Bethesda games are nothing like a Zelda game.
I said they make things that are better than Zelda. They do.
Are you a Fallout 4 fan?
No, I didn't like Fallout 4, but I'm talking about things like Oblivion.
Well, one could argue that the people who are playing Zelda in 1987 are now playing Skyrim.
I guess, but I played all of those games, and I think Oblivion is a completely different genre than a Zelda game.
It is, but you know,
we're in a similar vein. It's the same idea. You have like questing and a fantasy world,
and blah, blah, swords. Blah.
Like, yes, they're not identical, but they would fall in the same sort of genre.
Well, I wouldn't say that a Zelda game is not even an RPG because there's. The only stat you upgrade is your how much mana you can or magic power you have and how much health you have, and that's it. And you collect weapons. Whereas in like Bethesda RPG, you have stats, you can upgrade weapons, different kinds of armor, et cetera, et cetera.
It's more involved. But...
You can make meaningless choices in Fallout.
And the storylines are just completely different. And the thing about Bethesda RPGs is they're like a sandbox. Which is not what a Zelda game is. A Zelda game is a very linear, story-driven, you know, experience, I guess is the right word for it.
My concern is that for about 20 years now, Nintendo has been pissing away third party. And, like,
but,
I don't know, I'm worried that they're going to reach a singularity where there's hardly any third
party
on that platform.
I'll put it this way, yeah, but the thing is, a lot of people who buy Nintendo stuff don't care about third-party shit on the console. They only buy the first-party stuff, and that's been shown with
right.
The Wii U, the GameCube, the Nintendo DS, all that stuff. Everyone just cares about the Nintendo software. They don't care about the other stuff because it doesn't matter because it's never as good.
Which begs the question, why couldn't they just make Nintendo games on
another
console?
And I would, well... At least PC, because I don't own any other consoles. But I would agree.
If they put Zelda on PlayStation or something, you would buy a PlayStation. Then.
Exactly, I would, because I'd do the same thing. Is you know, if they release Breath of the Wild on a PS4, I would buy a PS4 to play it because it'd be exactly the same as me buying a Switch just to play that game.
See, like, for me, for somebody like me, though, like, you will follow that franchise wherever you have to go to play it.
Exactly.
Me, I won't. But if they brought out a Zelda game for
a system I already own, like an Xbox One or a PS4, I might actually play it. But there's no way in hell I'm going to go and buy the Wii U or the Switch to play it.
Yep.
That's what they're missing out on.
Exactly.
And yeah, I think that's their main problem.
I would
problem.
Agree there, too.
It's like they can't... So the thing is, like, no company wants to be in hardware. Hardware is ultra expensive. And if any company could do away with hardware, it's Nintendo, because people don't care about the hardware, they care about the intellectual property. Yet they're so stubborn, they won't do that until they're forced. But here's my thing with the Switch. The Switch could be an enormous flop. It is possible, because it's going to be too big to be a handheld portable. It's going to be too expensive to be a handheld portable, and it's going to be too weak to be a console. Like it could satiate neither.
Yeah. And I think they could have fixed all those issues too if they made it more. They made it a tablet instead of what it is now. And so it's exactly the same form factor it is now, except it runs Android as the base layer. And so you can put whatever apps you want on it. And then there's a big Nintendo icon that you click, and bam, now it's the Switch. Why didn't they do that? Because that would make it great and awesome. And now you have if it's the same price as a normal tablet, there's no reason to buy a normal tablet when you have a Nintendo tablet. I guess Nintendo is now Apple
regard. You know what you can get for the price of a tablet? You can get a PlayStation 4.
That's an expensive tablet.
Not compared to
I was going to say it's a cheap tablet compared to an
I don't know. My tablet, it was like $100, so.
Oh. Yeah, iPads aren't in that realm.
That's pretty cheap.
Yeah, I did buy a Google Pixel.
I bought my sister like a Nexus 5 or whatever the newest Nexus tablet was like last Christmas, and I want to say it was like $300. Oh. So high or nice Android tablets are at least $300.
Yeah, I bought my tablet just to watch movies on, so it didn't need to be super crazy expensive.
I still use my 2013 Nexus, my little tablet. It's like 7 inches, and I like it because the thing is, it's not that big. You can hold.
Well, that's
it.
What I
know why Parker like. Now we know why Parker likes going to the theater. He watches movies on his tablet. So.
No, I watch it on my screens I have in front of me. I have a twin 24-inch 1440p monitors on my computer.
Do you, like, cast it or something?
Yeah, usually.
Still, you're watching a movie on a 24-inch monitor, you know?
Yeah. So in my office chair.
I can see.
I'll think that sometimes. I'll be sitting here at my computer, like, watching something. Like, I think I was watching Raging Bull, which I'd never seen before, actually. Till this day. Yeah. Anyway, I'm like, wait, why am I watching this here when I have this perfectly good TV in the room? So,
yeah, I don't have a nice TV, so.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, the thing is, okay.
Because no, I did the thing, about this. How much is a good TV, how much is, like, Jones's new OLED going to be?
Oh, there. OLED.
Yeah, you don't want to know.
The thing is, though, what you'll spend on an OLED is actually the same price as what I spent on my LCD TV.
Well, how much though is that? Like $3,000?
Yeah, the one that I'm gonna get is right around $3,000. And the thing is,
so like that's like 300 movies at the Alamo Drafthouse for me.
Yeah, and I mean, like my thing is like my TV's like always on. Like when I come home, I have it on, even if it's background noise. And the thing for me is like the TV I've got. When I bought that, I bought it back in it would have been 2007, and I paid. I think it was $2,300 for it back then, but it's like here I am, basically 10 years later, still with that TV. You know, so I don't know if the next one will make it that long. Probably unlikely, but it's like I get a lot of value out of it. So for me, it makes sense, you know, to spend that on it because I don't really spend money on much else. So figure, fuck it. And
the prices have come down.
Yeah, they've
a lot.
Come down significantly just in the last 6 months. And the thing is, you go to like Best Buy and you look at one of these OLEDs sitting right next to like, you know, the nice fancy Samsung TVs, which are nice TVs. But it's like, man, you see that right next to the OLED and you're like, damn, that OLED is nice. Like there's.
Maybe we should explain why OLED
there you
is
go,
better.
Ben.
It doesn't have backlights.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so how an LCD works is there's a backlight for one thing, and most of them are generated by LED. The thing is, backlights are on the edges, and then they are diffused inward and then outward, which is why when the screen is all black, you kind of can see where the lights are a little bit. But then it gets worse. Then that light comes forward, it goes through a polarizing filter, which aligns the light in a certain direction, and then the LCD elements twist to a certain degree, which either blocks or allows through the polarized light. Then it goes through another polarization filter, and then finally to your eyes. So you can never have like a true black. A black is just a very blocked off white area, if you think about it, which is the same thing with like a DLP TV or a movie projector. With film, it was like, here's a really dark part of the film, light hits it, but it can't go through it. Or, you know, we're not transmitting any light from this spot, but there's still going to be spill on the screen. Whereas OLED, it's organic light emitting diodes. And so it's not like an LCD blocking or allowing light through. It just illuminates or it doesn't. So that's why the blacks are just perfectly black, because there's...
So we need to build ginormous OLEDs for movie theaters. Like 70-foot diagonal OLEDs.
Oh my god.
Or just get like, you know, a couple thousand cell phones and just like tile them out.
Actually, really high-end digital projectors for theaters are rasterized lasers.
Huh. Did not know that.
Yeah. So same thing. It's like either light is there or it's off.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Like that OLED TV. Like I went to Best Buy and they had like The Martian playing on both it and like the Samsung next to it. So they had it like synchronized and all that. And so there's scenes, you know, where there's like shadows, you know, with like the mountains on Mars and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, yeah, like Ben says, with the blacks, you know, like where it just flat out does not transmit anything if it's, you know, black. And it was just like, holy shit. Like, the difference was just amazing, because the Samsung, it looked kind of grayish, almost. It wasn't grayish. That bad, but it's like, yeah, you know, charcoal. You can see something there, whereas, yeah, the OLED, it's just like, no, that's, like, pitch black.
It actually, the black on OLED actually sucks photons into it.
But even so, like, you can get, like, well, I just bought one for the shop. I got a 55-inch Samsung HDR 4K. It was $1,000.
Yeah.
So like, it's smaller than the screen I have here at home, but it was almost a third price in 2 years.
Crazy. Like, I mean, like that's like a really nice TV. You know, it's like you can buy a TV like that for $1,000 now. I mean, that's like crazy. Yeah. You know, like.
And it's not like Hangzhou or Polaroid or some off brand. It's like it's a Samsung. Yeah.
So there you go, Parker. You can buy one of those.
So I'm just saying. I bought my two Samsung TVs 2 years apart, and it's like the price difference is like astronomical.
I put this way, the TV I own, I bought in 2007, and it was $300 for a 34-inch. So it was definitely really, really, really cheap.
Yeah. I mean, Jones, if you go from a DLP to an OLED TV, like the black level difference is going to be...
Yeah, well, plus, like, my TV right now, it's definitely on its last legs. It kind of has this tank of urine feel to it a little bit, where there's kind of, like, a greenish-yellowish hue to, like, whites and things on it. So it's definitely reached the point where it has served me well, but days are numbered.
It's time to take it out behind the shed and go.
It's been with me through thick and thin, so...
Yeah. I'll put it this way, is my two monitors here cost like three times what my TV cost. I guess that's where I like playing video games more than watching movies, so.
Yeah.
No, I can't say the same thing as my monitors. So the Nintendo Switch, probably wrap this up.
Is Parker going to buy one? Like, if Zelda's there day one.
If Zelda's there day one, I buy it day one. That's what's going
to be. It's not. It's been pushed back to summer.
Yeah, it's. I'll put it this way. I own a Wii. I don't own a Wii U. There's no game on the Wii U that I cared about. There was a Star Fox game, but it wasn't a really good Star Fox game, so I kind of just passed on it. But yeah, there was no Zelda game on the Wii U. And that's why I didn't buy one. So.
There you go, Nintendo, if you're listening.
You have one buyer in Texas. We sell the game.
You could have sold 10 million and one Wii U's if
you
would have put a Zelda game on it.
Yep.
Well, maybe quickly we can discuss, like, the Wii U, I think, is their least successful console ever by a long shot. It's like, what happened?
I think it just people didn't care. What did they even have a Mario game besides, like, Mario Maker?
I think they have, like, Mario 3D World.
But they didn't,
I guess.
But they didn't have, like, a big, like, Mario Galaxy, which that was a big game for the Wii. Like, that was a, like, well, I would say, like, a franchise game. So they didn't have, like, a franchise Mario. They didn't have a franchise Zelda.
Zelda.
They had some, like, side Zelda games. Same thing with Mario. They had a Star Fox game, which was okay-ish, but not, like, you know, SNES Star Fox or N64 Star Fox quality.
They have Metroid or anything like that?
No, Metroid. So it's like, even Nintendo didn't build any games for this damn thing.
Yeah. Even they didn't have faith in it.
Yeah. So I think what the Wii U was an exploration into what the Switch is. Because it's the Wii U is a Switch with the controllers just glued on. It doesn't come off. Well, at least the controller part.
I think the Switch will do really well in Japan, but I don't know if it will make a dent here.
People will buy it. The hardcore Nintendo fans, and that's the thing, is the hardcore Nintendo fans in the States didn't buy a Wii U because they're like me. They don't care about the hardware too much. They only really care about the games, and they weren't there with the Wii U. Like, I've owned a single Nintendo console up until the Wii U, and only because of the games.
I think I owned everyone up until the Wii U, too, strangely enough. It's like, because I bought a Wii at some point for some godforsaken reason.
I have a launch day Wii, but that's because the Zelda game was a launch day game, so.
I had a GameCube.
The GameCube was legit, so.
At the 64.
Yeah. Well, that was back when Nintendo actually made good hardware.
Those were the days.
Those were the days when discs were small and something about resolution being small, too. That is not the golden age. That's actually what people keep saying, oh, yeah, the golden age of gaming was blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, every single year is the best year for gaming.
Exactly.
It's well, like at least right now platform. Is the golden age. It's like, because it's like, how Battlefield 1 plays and looks, and the fact that it looks so good on what hardware I have. Like, I can run an Ultra, and I don't have a, monster GPU or anything like that.
What about 2007? That was a hell of a year for gaming.
Yeah, I don't remember what happened in 2007. Was that the Orange Box came out in 2007?
Orange Box came out, Bioshock, Call of Duty.
That year, or was that the year before?
Oblivion was before.
Wait,
that.
Call of Duty 4 came out in 2007? That is the worst looking game out of the entire bunch you just listed off.
It's huge when it came out.
I thought you just said graphics didn't matter, Mr. Nintendo fan.
I don't think I ever said that on this podcast yet.
But they said, switching sides. Time deathmatch.
I think I bought the game just to play with y'all because y'all were, like, wanking all over that game.
I think I only played... I didn't even have that on PC. I played that on Xbox.
No, I don't think we even knew you back in 2007.
No, yeah, but when we played it in, like, 2012, 2013, something like that.
Oh, that wouldn't... I didn't play that. I've never bought that on PC. But that might have been Ben and Mike and...
Oh, yeah, I think I might have rebought it on Steam for, like, $5 for some reason, because...
No, it was Mike. Mike wanted to play it.
Well, if you play it for, like, one night, you got your money's worth out of it for $5, so...
It's not that... It did not age well.
I would agree with Parker, like, when he said, the golden age of gaming is, like, now. Like, that's the thing that's interesting. Like, unlike movies, where I like watching old movies and stuff, I very, very rarely ever think about, like, oh, I'd like to go play that game again that I played 10 years ago. Like, I always am in the current generation, and then once, you know, you move on to whatever the next one is, then that one falls by the wayside, and, you know, I don't...
There's a couple games that I will go back and play. It's more for the story. I guess there's zero multiplayer games I go back and play. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. Like, for me, I would love to pull, like, the one of the few exceptions to that would be, like, Mass Effect. At some point, I would love to play through all three of those again.
We gotta get Ben to play those, because I think he would love them.
Yeah. They're really good. I mean, they're really just really excellent sci-fi, and, you know, it's like, when I played those, I'm like, those are something that they could turn into a movie franchise if they did it right.
Easily.
Unlike Assassin's Creed.
Which I haven't seen yet, even though it has Fassbender and...
Wait, that came out?
Yeah, it came out Christmas weekend.
Oh yeah. I don't think anyone...
Fassbender and, like, Jeremy Irons and...
That was one of the trailers in the movie. When I went to go see Rogue One, that was one of the trailers was for that movie. I'm like, oh, that looks okay. And then I completely forgot about it.
Trailers, but I just haven't wandered into a theater.
It's only made $31 million. That's not very
good. And not when it cost $125 or whatever the hell it was.
So, yeah.
Maybe next time.
At least... The thing is, once a single video game movie is a big hit, there's the flood.
When is the World of Warcraft movie supposed to actually come out?
It came out in the summer. It's actually solid. Like, I enjoyed it. It made a fuck ton of money in China. It didn't do well in the States, but it made enough money in China where they're actually considering making a sequel and probably just targeting it at China. It made like 50 in the States, and then, like, in China, it made, like, 300 or something like that.
I didn't even know it came out. Yeah. I remember seeing a trailer for it, but then that was it.
I think that makes sense. If there's, like, some movie that's just... I haven't seen it, but, you know, like, a dumb special effects movie that's going to make most of its money in China, like, just release it there. Like, don't stink up our...
They can just bring it out on video on demand here, you know, and...
That is pretentious, but the thing is, that's why movies are just about special effects and explosions now, because you don't have to translate those. I firmly believe, like, the exploding international box office is a direct causality of why our movies are so dumb now.
So I got a good segue for this is, what video game would y'all want to see as a movie?
I think we talked. Didn't we talk about this on the last podcast? I'm trying to remember.
Well, I wasn't on the last podcast, so it's my question now.
Feels like we had this conversation.
Or maybe the question is, what could work as a movie, like Tomb Raider?
Yes.
Yeah.
Could easily work.
Yeah, Tomb Raider.
Like, that's one of the rare success stories.
No, it was a successful movie, but it was a piece
of shit. Yes, but I'm saying it. You know, the first one was a success.
A Tomb Raider movie based off the current video game reboots would be awesome. They already are, like, movies.
Well, they're making... It's coming out, like, next year, I think.
Yes, and it's well documented that I don't agree with their casting choice, but they are making one, so we'll see.
Yeah. All you have to do is make female Indiana Jones. How hard could it be? But the 2001 Tomb Raider was just garbage.
Not good. Even had James Bond in it, for Christ's sakes. Couldn't get it right. Yeah, what would work? What would work?
Five Nights at Freddy's could work.
Yeah, that would work too.
Freddy's?
You don't know what the game is, Jones?
No.
So it's a game where you play a security officer in a, like, Chuck E. Cheese, and the animatronics
come to life at night.
Thank you, Ben.
Oh, okay. So it's like Westworld or something.
It's Westworld at Chuck E. Cheese, .. We had sex!
Well, I hope you don't have sex with those things.
You describe every HBO show, it's always like, it's blank, .. With sex.
Like True Blood, vampires, .. With sex. So, yeah, it works.
And Westworld is Westworld dot 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 with sex.
Wait, I have no, that does not work with Band of Brothers.
Yeah, it's,
that was like the one pre sex. That was pre-sex days for.
Actually, there was some sex in. I think there was like someone was getting fucked in it. Like, remember, like he fucks like some.
Okay, in one episode out of like full, like 13 of them. And it's like episode like 8 too, so it's like near the end. But you're right, he does like bone some French girl. That was
good for it.
And then in the Pacific, Fringe Woman is in it, and she gets
there's boning in each season, so a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit of boning. Yeah.
So I think for your question, Parker, I guess I answered it before you asked it when I said Mass Effect. But...
Yeah. I assume that's what you would say.
Yeah.
That sounds expensive.
It would be, but it...
it'd be awesome.
I mean, to me, like, when I played through that game, I'm like, you know, if they made this into a movie series and did it right, this would be the new Star Wars. But that was, you know, now, of course, Star Wars is back.
Star Wars is the new Star Wars.
But...
But the thing is, we need something new.
It could take over Star Trek.
Yeah.
Because, God, I hate Star Trek.
Yeah. See, Star Trek
is just drama in space, so.
I like the Star Trek stuff, so. But, yeah, it's like, it'd be cool to see that, but, yeah, it'll probably never happen unless, like, some other video game movie hits, you know, like Ben says, then they start, like, green lighting shit all over the place, but... The problem with Mass Effect is I would just be afraid, you know, given the track record with video game movies, that they, you know, would
cock it justice. Up somehow.
Yeah, would get it right.
I think they need to do something very subversive. It's like, I bet whatever video game movie actually ever hits, it's going to be like not a mainstream movie. Like Hollywood keeps wanting to make a Grand Theft Auto movie, but Rockstar's like, why? It's like, we make more money.
Yeah. Why would it be even a movie? There's like, it's just a sandbox world with you go around and
kill
stuff.
Why it has.
I mean,
but that's why I think it'll be something like Five Nights at Freddy's, or if they ever made like Papers, Please the movie. It'll be like an indie movie that somehow gets turned into a cheap movie, which means it'll be profitable if it's, you know, successful.
I was actually looking at my...
They'll make like a $10 million Five Nights at Freddy's.
I was looking at my desktop trying to figure out what game I would pick, and I probably would pick Overwatch. Just because the current lore that they have in the game makes you want to know more about the characters and what created the situation the game is in now. It's like, I want an origin story for all these characters. And it's like, they could do basically the Marvel comic book effect for all these characters. So I'd like an Overwatch, like, series of movies.
I see Hollywood would like that, because they're like, oh, look, it's like something we could franchise and make a ton of. Because, they've got all these, like, you know, individual hero characters that all have, you know, their own... Yeah, backstories, so you could potentially crank out a whole bunch of stuff.
I would go hand over fist for a Mass Effect movie, though. So
yeah,
there.
That would be badass. I just remember like playing through that game and like the later stages in it and stuff. It like the first game, it's just like so fucking epic when you're like,
oh yeah, like
going in the Citadel and stuff like that. And
it's like the first time, and like at the end, oh my, Ben, you just need to play this fucking game, this series of games. Like, do you own these games, Ben? I will buy these games for you to go play them.
No,
they're on sale on Origin right now. I saw them
for a great price.
Go like buy them. I think it's like $15 for all three games, like total.
That's like almost 200 hours of gaming for $15.
Yeah, if you could pay $5 for fucking Call of Duty.
Yeah. Buy them now.
All right.
I'll think about it. Get an Origin now and go buy it.
I know I saw a Mass Effect trilogy somewhere.
I'll open up Origin here and see.
That was the end of this podcast because Origin crashed his desktop.
Well, yeah, actually, we probably should wrap this up.
We're giving people two episodes in one here since we missed up.
Yeah, so that'll make up for November.
$14.99 for the Mass Effect trilogy.
That's
my God, I can't even imagine a price
it's
that
three old. Times five minus a penny.
I can't imagine that. All right, well, let us know what you thought about these topics in the comments below. What did you think of Rogue One? Do you still enjoy going to movie theaters? And do you think the Nintendo Switch will be a success? And we'll talk to you next
time. Adios.
Later, guys.